You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Sorry about that late intro there, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm still learning this new equipment, and I had one of these switches in the wrong position. Once again, I'd like to apologize to anyone who may have been offended by some of the language in last night's presentation. We did not know that the language was in that CD, and it was an award-winning Broadway presentation entitled Assassins, and I was not listening to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I put it on. I listened for about 6 minutes and then worked on something else for a good portion of that hour. When I began listening, getting ready to go into the ending sequence at about 10 minutes until the end of the broadcast, I heard some language that I was not pleased with, and you probably were not either. Anyway, I apologize for that. Since there was only 10 minutes left in the broadcast, and I knew that the end number was clean because I had used it in other broadcasts before, I decided to allow it to go until the end of the hour. And thank goodness there were no more accidents. I listened to the entire CD this morning and was appalled. However, I think it did do a very good job at pointing out the insanity, the horror, the vulgarity connected with any assassin. Even if you think you're right to the nth degree, the turmoil, the heartache, the chaos that is created by such an act has very seldom been worth it. I know that some would argue the contrary, and in some particular assassinations in history, I might argue on the side that it needed to be done also. But in the case of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, I don't think that there's anyone in this nation anyway who could argue that it was justified in any sense whatsoever. In fact, it destroyed literally the political will of the nation, and we have not recovered to this day. I don't know if we ever will. Now, to test this new equipment tonight, folks, I've got to do some things. I've got to play some music. I've got to take some phone calls. I'm talking now. And I have people out there who are listening to try to determine if there are still any problems in our audio and in our broadcast. And they will be making notes all during this hour. Our Kennedy series is not finished, by the way, but we need to take a break and do this to make sure that everything is operating properly and that I have everything hooked up correctly and that I know how to use it, which I'm not sure that I do. So if I make some mistakes, please bear with me. I'll be taking calls. Tonight the number is 520-337-4578. Don't start calling right now. I'll tell you when to start, but I want to play some music before that. And you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. It'll be open subject tonight. If you want to read me the riot act for last night, that's okay. I think you probably have a right to do that. Although I can't do anything more than apologize. I'm just as disappointed as some of you probably were when you heard it. I am not Howard Stern, have no aspirations to become Howard Stern, and I can promise you that that won't happen again, ladies and gentlemen. And somebody's calling. You see, some people just don't listen. I said, don't call right now, because I'm not going to pick up the phone. You're wasting your time. You're going to wear your finger to the nub, and you're not going to get anywhere. It's beyond my understanding. person is calling on the call-in line, which means he's listening to the broadcast, which means whoever it is heard what I said, and they're still calling. So, I'll give them this little message. Okay, folks, we'll start taking calls now. 520-337-4578. That's 520-337-4578. Had to do a few things before I could start picking up the phone. Well, looks like I did it again. It's 520-333-4578. You know, we used the 337 number for almost 2 years, so it's sort of stuck in my head. 520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air.
This is Greg calling from Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Yes, Greg.
And I was coming up, I was listening today to your tape of the Gustafson Lake situation up in Canada.
Yes.
Indians. And I was curious if you had any current affairs.
It was resolved about a week and a half after we did that broadcast. I think our broadcast had a lot to do with it. I think a lot of the calls to Washington and the calls from Washington to Canada wanting to know what was going on had a lot to do with it. Some Indian activists were arrested. Their lawyer, trying to get in to defend them in court, was arrested. They wouldn't let their lawyer represent them. That's how bad things are in Canada right now. And the government made an agreement to turn the land back to the Indians, which had been taken to them, which would brought all this thing about.
Well, that's good. That's good news. And in fact, that's why I bought the tape, because I was camping when I heard that broadcast the first time, and you know, I didn't have a pen or paper on me. And it's also good because that was actually the program that my mom heard with me when she was camping, and I think it's exactly the one that she had to hear, because I was going around and around with her. She was thought of thinking I was a wacko and all this. And
yeah, I know, we're all wackos.
How that goes. But I think that was exactly the one she needed to hear, and that's part of the reason why I got that, because she has been kind of badgering me about that as far as that.
Yeah. Do you get Veritas?
Yes, I do.
Did you get this issue yet?
No, in fact, I didn't. And I could talk for a while about that, because forgive me, I'm trying to get over a cold here. The first thing I did was I called after I talked to the local postman. Of course, his attitude was, he didn't really seem to care. He said, hey, there's nothing I can do about it, you know, his lackadaisical attitude.
He will have that lackadaisical attitude until you file a formal complaint.
Well, that's pretty much what I'm going through right now. I've had a hard time doing that because I work every day of the week, but I've been calling the postmaster of the town, and curiously enough, they seem to know that the woman who I talked to, when I told her the zip code of origin, the postal code of origin where Veritas comes from, she says, oh, that's a small distribution paper, isn't it? And I said, well, actually, no, but, well, you know, if you're that familiar with it, then, you know, it just kind of gave me a weird feeling the way they dealt with me about it. So
yeah, they're probably pulling it out and reading it.
I thought, and, you know, I've had some strange things with the mail before, mainly when I was in Albuquerque, and I was doing lots of dialogue with Senator Bingaman and Domenici in their offices, and boy, they used to give me the runaround all the time. So I'm just kind of used to that anyway. So I'll probably end up buying a back issue from you guys. But
well, I hate for that to have to have. Call Mike. He won't be in until next week. In fact, he's sort of on an unscheduled vacation. He went home for Thanksgiving holidays, and the transmission in his automobile took a dump, and so he's not going to be back until that gets fixed. It's in the shop, and it's going to take several days, so he won't be there until next week sometime. I don't know exactly when. And when he is, call him, tell him I said to send you another paper.
Yeah, that's
and go down and file a formal complaint. Don't go down and talk to those people. The post office is notorious.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
And they don't care, because it's hard to fire those people. They don't care. Unless you file a formal complaint, they don't have to even give you the time of day.
Yeah, and I pretty much learned that just from from the local delivery guy's attitude. Also, by the way, I wanted to just tell you that, you know, I stopped in the last time I was coming through. My business was out there in Phoenix. And I just wanted to stop around, you know, see Mike, shake his hand, and I think I came away with the impression that he's a great guy. I talked to him for a few hours. And you know, I'm the kind of person where I like to actually, you know, everything that you've ever told me, I've been able to verify myself. But it's not the same until I can actually, like, see you or him. Do you know what I'm saying?
And I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, so that's always been good. And I would like to also say to some of the listeners, if they're new, that at first, when I was listening to this guy, William Cooper, I started trying to prove his story right. And then when I
tried to prove it right?
Trying to prove that what you were saying was true.
Oh.
And then I sort of, when so many things were coming true, it was starting to become a little bit frightening for me, because I was still in that sort of transition stage, if you know what I mean. So I started to try to look for the holes in your story, and lo and behold, all I do is cement those holes right over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what happens to most people who set out on that road, and that's why I've presented this broadcast in the manner that I have. When I first started out as a messenger to the American people, I was real polite and just stroked them and told them how wonderful they were. And I wasn't really stroking, because I really believed it. And I really thought that all somebody had to do was open some windows and open some doors and let them get a glimpse of what it was in the outside real world, and they'd take it from there. It didn't happen that way, and it was never going to happen that way. So they needed to be smacked upside the head with a 2x4, and I decided, since I couldn't do it with a real 2x4, I'd do it verbally, and hating it all the while, because that's not really what I'm all about. But it worked.
Well, you know, me neither, but also I've run into the same thing. You know, I bought some of Stephen Jacobson's tapes, and I was distributing them out to some people as sort of like gifts, if you can call it that. And I had some people actually listening to the Wake Up America turning around and saying to me, boy, this would be amazing if it was true. And I'm like, what do you... It was kind of reminded me of that guy from Canada who called the other
day. I see.
He shows people documents, and they laugh at it.
Yeah.
And people don't even... They're so far. They don't even understand. But anyway, thanks for everything that's going on, and thanks for the current events going on with the situation up there. Now, there was more than one Indian situation going on up there, right?
Yeah. Gustafson Lake, they were all basically about the same thing. Lands had been taken away from the Indians. And the headline story of Veritas, this issue is about the American government trying to take land away from the Indians again. And one tribe that they've repeatedly taken land away from over and over. They break treaties with these people like crazy. But anyway, I gotta let you go. You've been on way too long, and I gotta test the bass with this upcoming song here.
Okay, great. Keep up the good work, and thanks again.
Thanks for calling. Okay, let's check out the bass, folks.
Mr. Bassman, you got that certain something. Mr. Bassman, you said that music something. See you it's season. When you go 1, 2,
You guys, but this sound coming through my headphones sounds so much better than what we had before. You know, when you sit here and you listen to this, and it slowly changes over a long period of time, like the last 4 years, as your equipment begins to wear out and burn up, and the slide switches and pots begin to wear, you don't notice it. You just get used to it. And so one day I was sitting here and realized that our sound stunk. And I mean, it was bad. So that's what brought all this about. And maybe I really didn't want to look at it so hard because, you know, this stuff is expensive and we don't have all that much money. Good evening, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. It's a pleasure to be talking to you again. I'd like to thank you again for waking me up and showing me that America is truly not all that it seems. And I had a question. I've been trying to follow your advice and to read everything and believe nothing. And I was wondering if you were familiar with Serge Manast.
Serge Manast, the name is familiar. Who is Serge Manast?
Well, the reason I'm asking is because he'd been talking about the NASA, and he had done some tapes and some literature on the NASA Blue Beam project.
Oh, he's that guy up in Canada, right?
Yes, sir. I was wondering if you could add anything to that, because I haven't been able to find too much.
What I can add is take most of his stuff and throw it in the trash.
Oh, really?
Yes. Some of it's valid. I don't know where he's getting it, but an awful lot of it is absolute nonsense, and we got to stay away from absolute nonsense.
That's true. So you don't believe that there's any hologram projectors that were used during the Gulf War or anything that would be used to fake a...
Not in the Gulf War, no.
Okay.
I know that technology exists. In fact, for about a year, they used it at Disneyland in California, and it was so effective that people would crowd in there. They'd go to Disneyland just when they were going to do the laser show in the evening and just crowd it in there so packed tightly that that it got to be a little bit dangerous. They were projecting images into the sky that were so real that people were overwhelmed, and these images somehow were talking down to the crowds. And that is... I don't know about you, but that's pretty scary.
It is, especially if it was used as a weapon. I had one other question, and it was,
what if it was used to make people think that Jesus Christ was coming back?
Well, that was his premise, that they were going to use it to, say, you know, make an image of Mary or Jesus Christ, and...
Well, that is a possibility, but he doesn't know that they're going to do that, and neither do I. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
I understand.
The guy has gone over the over the realm of where he should be.
I'd also like to thank you. I got my first copy of Veritas today in the back issue that I paid for, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But I had one question about a broadcast that you had done, I guess, about 2 months ago, and you'd left us on the edge of our seats, and you had said something about what if the two men that had warned Lot were time travelers. And I wondered if you'd ever done a follow-up show on that, or if you...
No, I wasn't trying to suggest that they were. The purpose of this broadcast is to find the truth and relay it to the American people whenever we can.
Uh-huh.
The truth is elusive at best. We all know that.
Uh-huh.
But we try our best here, and we've been very successful. And to instill in people the need to think and examine and be critical about everything.
Well, I ran right for my Bible to read that story again about Lot and the men, and I couldn't believe it. But I was hoping, were you going to do a follow-up on that, or was
that... No, that was just something to make people think and to do something and use their minds. I do that all the time. I want everybody to use your mind. Think. I might say a lot of things on here that I don't personally believe in, but if it instills in you the desire to think, to examine something, and to get used to doing that all the time, then I'm successful in what I'm trying to do.
More than done that, sir, and I can't tell you how much I I appreciate your broadcast. I wish you were on longer. I could listen to you all night.
If I was on longer, I'd be dead. I got to tell you this. You have no conception of what it takes. All but you see, there's no staff here. There's no studio. There's no engineer. There's no producer. There's me and Pooh. And that's it. Pooh's sitting right here beside me with her earphones on, reading her book, her little child's book about Jesus. And while I do the broadcast, she's sort of my moral support.
I don't have any kids of my own, but I listened to that broadcast of when you had your baby, of all the things that you went through, and I just I felt like I was right there, and I just admire and love you, and God bless you, and I keep up the good work. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, folks, I got some letters after I made that statement about Lot and the angels. And some people accused me of blasphemy and all kinds of stuff. Folks, all I was trying to do was make you think about it, make you examine something that you probably never examined before. You see, we have a tendency to believe what we're told. And if there are people in authority, if there are parents, if there are minister, if there are school teachers, if there are college professors, we just take it for granted that they're telling us the truth. And sometimes I may just drop those things out there. It doesn't mean that I believe it at all. And conversely, it doesn't mean that I don't believe it either. But it's done to leave you thinking, examining. To make it so you can't go to bed until you check into it. I think that's important. Americans have lost the ability to think, and specifically to think originally. There are people in this country who have never had an original thought in their entire life. And that is not what God intended when He gave us a brain. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Nice to talk to you, Mr. Cooper. I've enjoyed listening to you. A friend of mine here from Fond of Kansas, he steered me your direction a while back, and it's been a very eye-opening and mind-expanding experience for me, and I appreciate him and you. This friend of mine is involved in militia, real involved in it, and he's, you know, told me some things he's heard, and I was wondering if you had heard anything similar, specifically that there are troops refusing to go to Bosnia. I mean, American troops from some forts here in the United States that are just refusing to go, and that they're kind of keeping that, you know, trying to keep that under wraps. You sure don't hear anything about it on the.
Well, let me tell you how that started. The other night on the Tom Valentine show, and I wasn't listening, somebody called me, one of my people, said a lady had called in and said that some troops at a specific army base, and she mentioned the base, and I'm not going to repeat it here because people go off believing what they hear all the time, and said that they had refused to go to Bosnia, and they were arrested and taken to the base, and then the base was all closed up and all this kind of stuff. We checked into that and can find no substantiation for it whatsoever.
Well, he takes more of an approach like you. He doesn't just jump out everything he hears, but he said it was something he heard, and I just wondered.
I heard it on the Tom Valentine show.
I don't think
from somebody who was listening, because that's exactly where it came from.
Okay. The other thing is, I've heard things mentioned concerning this, our ability to track submarines. I've heard this several places. I think I may even heard on your show. I've listened to some things. Sometimes I can't remember where I heard it, but that we're unable to do that now.
Unable to track submarines?
Unable to really know where all the Soviet submarines are like we used to be, and that NORAD has been shut down, and I've heard stuff like this where our defenses are basically just much, much weaker by design, you might say, because of the people that wanted things to go the direction it seems to be going now.
Our defenses are strong as they have always been. Our ability to reach across continents and oceans and perform a retaliatory or a first strike on an enemy has been devastated.
ability to know when they're doing that to us is still as good.
It's still as good as it ever was.
So that's a little comfort, not a whole lot.
And Soviet submarines are, well, who knows who they belong to now. I still call them Soviet submarines because I haven't bought the scam yet and never will. I read Perestroika, written by the king, so... And Soviet submarines are notoriously noisy, and we were the pioneers in subsea detection systems, and I can guarantee you that Sinklant and Sinkpak know exactly where every Soviet submarine is at this very moment, wherever they're at in the world.
Well, that's a little bit encouraging, I guess, if the people that are running the show really care if they're not just in bed with them, you know. But anyway, I'll let somebody else talk. I appreciate you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for calling. But it is true, ladies and gentlemen, that our strike capability no longer exists. And you saw how long it took us to move troops and equipment and logistics to the Middle East to fight the desert scam. If Saddam Hussein had really wanted to, he could have destroyed our entire army before they even had a chance to fight. It was a pathetic, for anybody who understands military tactics, it was a pathetic display of a staged war. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Yes.
Hi. Dan from Canada calling.
Hi.
Hi. I got a two. Is this kind of open line?
What do you mean by open line?
Different topics.
Oh, whatever you want.
Oh, good. Okay. A little bit of a twofold thing here. Do you know of a book called The Urantia?
The Urantia book, yes.
Have you any idea who wrote it?
Nobody knows who wrote it.
Where it came from? I heard some rumor that possibly the Mormons wrote it.
Nobody knows who wrote it. If they do, they're not talking. They claim that it was channeled by somebody.
I don't know. I just know that the Kellogg Corporation printed it through with the, you know, Urantia Foundation or something, but I just thought maybe you knew something more about it than I did.
I do. It's a scam.
Well, I wasn't sure. Very interesting.
You're not sure? Really? Did you read it?
Well, I've been reading it.
And you're not sure?
Well, my uncle claims it's written by the angels, and I'm kind of skeptical myself.
Well, did he see the angels write it?
No, he didn't.
Well, then, did you ask him how he knows that the angels wrote it?
He just seems to really believe in it.
Well, you see, it's a religion.
Yeah.
Like all other religions, it's based... If you want to believe it, you can believe it. If you don't want to believe it, you don't have to believe it. But if you want to know the truth, there isn't any truth in it.
I did some study and scientific sort of research on the first third of the book, and as for these heavens, astronomy and all that, nothing made sense.
That's right.
Nothing at all made sense.
It's total gobbledygook.
It was like our universe was like 500 light years, 5,000, a full 100,000 light years across, and I said, that's impossible.
Well,
it couldn't all fit in. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of all craziness, and he really believed in it. But... the other part of the, not question or whatever.
There's all kinds of things like the Urantia book floating around in the New Age movement.
Yeah.
And they have millions of followers.
Yawaspe is another one.
Yes.
That I've got a hold of, and I kind of, it's very strange also. Anyway, I was reading in my latest copy of Scientific America in December about the Galileo coming December 7th. It's arriving at Jupiter.
Yes.
You made mention of their plutonium on board?
Yes, there is, on the main craft.
Yeah.
It's going to launch a small probe into Jupiter shortly after arrival. Okay. There's nothing on that probe.
Oh, there's nothing on the probe.
No, the probe's not going to do anything except go in and see how long it takes for the pressure of the planet to implode it,
yeah,
destroy it. And it'll be sending back whatever data it can.
Similar to a solar system.
Oh.
nice little comment about that. Yeah.
They're doing my job for me, aren't they?
So, well, I just thought I'd mention that. Yeah, that's coming up. They're arriving December 7th of this year, very shortly.
Yeah, the plutonium is on the main craft, which will go in a... First, it'll start in a very far-out orbit. And its mission is to go from moon to moon and photograph each of the moons and send those photographs and pictures and whatever they are back to the Earth. And then it will end by photographing Io, which is the closest moon to the planet's surface. And it will orbit in that low disintegrating orbit until it is pulled in eventually by the gravity and falls into Jupiter, where eventually it will reach a depth inside of the planet's surface, which is gases, where the pressure is so great that the craft implodes, and it will drive these two blanks of plutonium into each other and cause an explosion. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows if it will create a star. Nobody knows if it will go fizzle, and then that's it.
It would be interesting if...
But it's going to happen.
If they did create a little star there, and then they said, oops. It would be very interesting if they said, oops, we did a little...
Well, they would never admit to it. They would say that it was natural. And it's going to occur when the main craft Galileo falls into the planet's atmosphere. This will occur sometime in 1999, according to NASA's own figures of the prediction of the decay of the orbit.
Oh, that was my other question. If the probe is going down this month.
Forget the probe. That's nothing.
Then the orbit of the craft was, you answered my question.
Yeah, all orbits eventually decay.
Right.
There's no such thing as a permanent orbit. So when NASA tells you that the craft containing the plutonium is not going to fall into Jupiter, go into Jupiter, they are lying to you.
Yeah, it has to. It has to decay.
Yes, that's right.
Satellites around Earth, eventually they decay and they fall back into Earth.
That's right. And according to NASA's own statistics and their own press releases, it will start at the moon's farthest out, and it will orbit in a slowly... an orbit that slowly gets nearer to the planet, and it will end by photographing Io, which is the planet closest, or the moon closest to Jupiter, and it will continue in that orbit until the orbit disintegrates and it falls into Jupiter sometime in 1999.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to that.
It'll be very interesting. It's never been done before. Some scientists say that nothing's going to happen. Jupiter is not dense enough for any kind of explosion to light it off, and that may be true.
I'm still interested in this article, the way they were talking about that liquid hydrogen rocket was deemed, it was too dangerous to transport because of the shuttle blowing up. And the way they wrote it, they did not put, it just said solid fuel rocket. Two stage, they did not mention plutonium in the article. They just mentioned solid fuel two-stage rocket.
Well, let me tell you something. They could get the biggest tank of liquid hydrogen that they wanted to and launch it. It wouldn't even come near, in your wildest dreams, being as dangerous as that plutonium. If the rocket would have exploded and that plutonium would have got into the atmosphere, there was enough plutonium on that craft to kill every human being on this Earth.
Interesting that they only said it as a two-stage solid fuel rocket, but they did not mention the word plutonium. I guess they didn't want to scare people. I don't know.
Well, they had already done it. There was a big hue and cry.
Yeah.
A lot of people were worried about it. Not only was it dangerous when they launched it, but you see, it went out and it went around, I believe it was the moon, and then came back by the Earth. Or was it around Venus? Anyway, it went around something else and then came back by the Earth. I knew exactly what it was at the time. I've forgotten now. And it was such a close pass by the Earth when it came back by to catch that pull of gravity to sling it out faster toward Jupiter that a lot of people were worried that it would impact into the Earth if they made a miscalculation. But it didn't.
Wouldn't that have been fun? Anyway, okay, thanks a lot for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. Plutonium, ladies and gentlemen, is the most poisonous substance, as far as I can determine, that there is in the most minutest amounts. Pure plutonium, if it were to be let loose in the atmosphere, it would kill so many people.
that it's even it's just incredible to even talk about it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Bill?
Good.
I just wanted to speak on a few topics. One just quick question. Have you completed the Kaji, Oklahoma bombing tapes?
Yes. In fact, the last ones arrived today, and they'll start going out on Monday.
Oh, okay. Does that mean, you mean the last ones or the first ones? Because I believe I had placed an order like the day after the broadcast on which it was announced.
You weren't listening. When I announced it, I said specifically, they haven't even been edited yet. This is an advance offering. The people who send in their money now for the advance offering will get the first tapes that come in. You also got them at a lower price than anybody can get them now.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's therein lies the price difference. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't my concern. I was just wondering where they were. So that's good. I look forward to getting those. I also look forward to getting the newest Veritas. I'm a Veritas subscriber, and everyone who listens to you but doesn't subscribe to Veritas, I can assure you, you're missing a piece of the puzzle, because it's a real important step to educating yourself and therein being a responsible individual. And if you call yourself a patriot, you're not doing everything to educate yourself and to read everything, believe nothing. Well, this is part of the everything, and especially this, because it's one of the papers that doesn't lie to you, and you know, it's an excellent. Also, I enjoyed the weather control stuff, because to be honest, listening to it was good, but you don't grasp it all. At least I don't. I'm an auditory learner too, but just reading it was, and able to read it and reference it was very helpful. It was great work you've done, Bill.
Thank you. Plus, we give you the sources. You can go down and get your own copy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speaking of sources, you know what I've done? I've become so interested in the secret societies, religions, Freemasonry. I've been reading everything I can. And, in fact, I had done something. I had taken your advice, gone to some used bookstores, checked around, and tried to find the book you were reading out of, Freemasonry and Catholicism. That being nearly impossible, I found another piece of information that people may find interesting. The bookstores that I went into, if they didn't look at me cross-eyed, they said, oh, my gosh, we haven't had anything like that in a long time. And when we do, they usually leave right away. So I was wondering if it's part of the Freemason doctrine to never let this literature out, and is it part of their responsibility and duty to kind of pick this stuff up whenever they see it available to the public?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I'm not just being paranoid, because I also went to the library and checked around. And, of course, they do interlibrary loans, so be checking in New York. This would span every New York library. And, in fact, I can even do a tri-state area check. And I don't mean to scare anybody, but I have done a tri-state area check on Freemasonry, and none of the books that they said they used to have, except for things like Temple and the Lodge, newer publications, and you yourself had said that the older ones tell you the truth, the newer ones, they may, but they're certainly not as reliable. The older books, they had some publications from 47, 52. All the older books are gone. They were taken out and never returned, or are somehow missing within the library.
That's right. And some libraries, libraries are funded by the public. Anybody should be able to go in the library and read any book in the library. Some libraries have taken what secret society and Freemasonic books that they have, put them in a locked room, and won't let anybody go in and read them unless they're Freemasons. And that's wrong.
It certainly is. Boy, oh boy. It was unbelievable. And I can't stress enough how shocking this was to me. I had gone to libraries, and book after book after book, I had sheets and sheets. They had all said, oh, boy, this must have been taken out and never returned. Or, oh, here's one that was said was lost by a customer, and oh, this one's just missing, sorry. It was unbelievably, I can't find anything on this stuff. And I drive through the town I live in. and along with the Rotary Club and VFW Hall and all the emblems on what is a town roster, along with the name. There it is, free and accepted Masons.
Yeah?
Yeah, but you can't, but you ask someone, what's a Freemason? No one even knows. It's unbelievable. There it is, right there in the town roster, underneath the name, Town of Smithtown. Can't even find, can't even go to the Smithtown Library and find out what the heck is a Mason.
That's right. It's a secret society.
Unbelievable. And all the founding fathers were Masons. You think this stuff would be in our history books. You think someone, it might dawn on them that this is a little bit important as to what these people were, since most of the founding fathers, the people who formed the country you now live in and rules you supposedly abide by.
Well, let's set it straight. Many of them were Freemasons, not all.
Yeah, well, is it in fact most of them, or was it just a few? I know Ben Franklin, George Washington. I know the list goes on and on, but I don't know if that means most or many or some.
Many.
And
not most and not all.
Just to clear up some possible disinformation. Rooting back to Mystery Babylon, could you? I know it's tough to do because not only do you know so much about it, but it may be unfair to give such an edited version of the history running through Mystery Babylon to Knights Templar to the Masons, and how did the name, and then how did they become the Freemasons? Kind of what I read is that it went from Mystery Babylon to gee who knows where in most of the current publications I can get, back to something happening in Rome and then being then the secret society moving to France, and then after being chased out of France, they changed from Knights Templar to the Masonic Temple, Masons, and then from England as the Masons, they moved to America and called themselves Freemasons. And is there no truth in that, some truth in that?
Well, there's some truth in that, but you know, you're oversimplifying and leaving some things out and made a couple of insightful errors. But in you know, we have 15 minutes left. I want to get some other people in here. And I've done so many hours on the mysteries that if you really want to get an education in that, I suggest you get a tape list and buy the tapes to that series as you can afford them. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not tooting my own horn. It's just that I'm the only one who's done the in-depth study and put it over the airwaves and made it available to people on tape. It is the best education in the history of the secret societies and the mystery religions that exists upon the face of this earth.
Oh, and guess what? When you were speaking about Kennedy with someone, about this being a Masonic connection as to why he was killed, and then you mentioned, oh, and the big joke is that, of course, there's the fire on his grave and at the memorial. If people don't remember, the joke in that is that they're the philosophers of fire, of course, from your education, from the book Freemasonry and Catholicism.
That's right.
It's like spitting it right in the eye.
Yeah. Got to let you go.
Take care, Bill.
Take care. Thanks for calling. Okay, let's see what I got here queued up. Hello, Dave.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but my understanding on plutonium is you have to inhale a particle of it for it to be deadly. In other words,
that's why I said in the atmosphere, let loose in the atmosphere.
Yeah, because you can actually...
Or you can eat it.
yeah, you can eat it and it'll pass through your system. But, you know, there's a, can I say something about Bosnia?
Yes.
There's a rumor going around apparently in the, or a theory going around in some of the militia groups out here that one of the reasons for the deployment is that it's perfect practice for dealing with groups of snipers and urban guerrillas and people deployed.
Tell those guys to go to bed, will you?
Well, don't you think there's some, I mean, there's...
Tell them to quit fantasizing and start dealing with reality. What difference does it make? They have to be ready to deal with whatever they have to deal with. But they sit around and they fantasize and invent things and make up phony stories, and it just makes me sick. I can't believe it.
I think speculation is sort of part of human nature, but, I mean, I understand what you're saying, too.
Speculation, in this instance, as far as militias are concerned, only serves to discredit them, and it's more like masturbation.
Okay, Bill.
Strokes their egos, accomplishes nothing.
All right. Have a good evening.
Thank you for calling.
You bet. Bye.
Okay, the number is 520-333-4578. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey, Don Cooper.
Good.
Sam in Maryland.
Hi.
Look, I'm curious about the Freemasonry and Catholicism.
Uh-huh.
Who's the author?
I don't have it right in front of me tonight.
Did you mention it on the air some night? I try to get you most nights. Now, the reason I wanted to ask you is...
Let's see if I can drag it out of here.
Here where I am, I have access to...
It was published by the... Rosicrucian Fellowship. The author is Max Heindel. Copyright 1919.
Heindel?
Heindel.
H-E-I-N-D-E-L. Okay.
An exposition of the cosmic facts underlying these two great institutions as determined by occult investigation. Published by the Rosicrucian Fellowship, International Headquarters, Oceanside, California.
And I'm I have access to three university libraries here on the East Coast who have very old libraries.
Good. That's wonderful. I'm envious. I'm out in the country with no libraries, and I still get more than most of you people around this great conglomeration of books that you're surrounded by.
I'm thinking I might be able to find a copy of it, at least, you know, browse through it, maybe photocopy some of it or something, you know.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't say that to make you feel bad.
Oh, I know.
Just to get you motivated.
I read a lot. In fact, I've talked to you before. I've read a lot of stuff that you had on there already, except I was still a sheeple when I read it.
Well, you don't sound too much like a sheeple now.
No, I'm not. Well, it's like the cartoon you have in the paper.
Yep.
You know, the guy with looking for his helmet.
Yep.
I still have a little brown on my ears.
Well, don't feel bad. I had a brown all over me for a lot of years.
Is issue number 8 out now?
Issue number 8 is out, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten mine yet, so probably take another week or so.
Some people get them quick, and some people takes 2, 3, sometimes 4 weeks even.
I'm not going to hassle you over it. When it gets here, it gets here, and I'll enjoy it.
Okay, and don't hassle me anyway. Call Mike. He's the editor.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks for calling. 520-333-4578. I can't believe I said the number right that time. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. Derek from Rhode Island. Yeah, I heard your Kennedy tapes. They were very interesting. But a couple of points I want to make about it is, first, 13 months before the assassination was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Oswald was in Russia, married to a communista. I saw the KGB on TV. Excuse me, and they said that Oswald was a terrible shot and that he didn't know how to use a shortwave radio.
He was a Maggie's Drawers. You know what that means?
No.
In the military, and you go to the rifle range and you get down in your shooting position and you fire under absolute perfect circumstances at a stationary target. He couldn't even hit the target. When you can't hit the target, they hold up a red flag and wave it back and forth. That's called Maggie's Drawers.
Well, what I'm saying is that how did they know?
How did they know?
Yes.
That you're talking about the KGB.
Right.
How do you think they knew? That's their job to know. How do I know?
Yeah, how do you know?
Because I made it a point to research his military career. Everybody who knew him in the Marine Corps, it was a joke that how could he shoot Kennedy when he couldn't even hit the target on the rifle range under perfect conditions.
I think that if the KGB knew about him, then probably he was an agent. And what it all comes to is that I think that Kennedy was assassinated because he didn't want to take missiles out of Turkey. And what he actually did was he put our country in and the USSR in great jeopardy.
Well, you're wrong, because Kennedy's the one that made the agreement to take the missiles out of Turkey.
Yeah, afterwards.
No, that was the agreement to solve the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, but
they would remove their missiles from Cuba. We would remove our missiles from Turkey.
Why the USSR put the missiles in Cuba is because there were missiles in Turkey.
How do you know that? Nobody knows that.
Everyone said it during the time.
Well, it's just not true.
The missiles were in Turkey before the Soviet Union tried to put missiles in Cuba.
We've had missiles all over the place, but that's just not the reason for the missiles being in Cuba. The missiles were in Cuba to be able to make a first strike on the United States.
Hey, because the United States had missiles in Turkey to hit raw Russia. Intermediate range. ICBMs.
I don't get your point.
The U.S. had ICBMs in Turkey.
Yes.
Before they started shipping ICBMs to Cuba.
How do you know that?
They did this.
How do you know that? We don't know when the ICBMs were sent to Cuba. All we know is when we discovered they were there.
Well, I thought it was always common knowledge that we had missiles in Turkey before the missile crisis.
I don't understand why you're so wrapped up with the missiles in Turkey.
Well, that was the reason.
No, it wasn't the reason. Wasn't the reason at all.
What was?
The reason was because putting missiles in Cuba gave the Russians an edge on a first strike capability that they never had before. Had nothing to do with us having missiles in Turkey. Whether we had missiles in Turkey or not, the Russians would have put missiles in Cuba.
He had to equalize the situation.
Oh, baloney. You have to win a war. Good night, my friend. You're playing with a half a deck. When you're out to go to war and to win, you don't set out to equalize anything. You set out to win. That's the whole purpose. And I'm going to tell you something else. The purpose of the Cold War was not ever to launch missiles. It was to scare the hell out of the people of the world in order to make them say, please stop this. Get rid of nationalism. Make a world government. Make us safe. I'm scared of these atomic weapons. Had nothing to do with missiles in Turkey, and really had nothing to do with missiles in Cuba, except that whole scenario scared everybody half to death, including me. For 3 days, I slept under the belly of a B-52 looking up at hydrogen bombs. And if you think I wasn't scared, you're out of your mind. I was petrified. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill?
Yes.
Couple of questions. I don't know. I have a retail type business, and I'm beginning to hear horror stories on these credit card debts on people. People that I know that surprised me. And here all these credit card people are still trying to push this down everybody's throat.
What are you talking about? Explain yourself.
I'm beginning to hear people that have got themselves way overextended on credit cards. A whole lot of people that surprised me. And, every day you get some in the mail. I don't know if it's the bankers trying to push these credit cards down everybody's throat to get everybody in debt, or...
They want everybody to be in debt.
But they're doing a good job of it.
When you're in debt, you're a slave.
I guess that's what it is.
When you're in debt, you don't own anything. You see, they can come and take whatever you have to satisfy the debt.
Well, there's a whole lot of it, isn't there?
It's like drugs. When you're addicted to drugs, you're a slave. When you're addicted to credit, you're a slave. When you're addicted to welfare, you're a slave.
Yes, sir. One other question, see if you have a feel for it. How long for this economic meltdown starts? Will it wait till after the election if we have election, or?
Well, I'm a messenger, sir. I'm not a prophet. I can tell you that it's going to happen, but I can't foresee the future and tell you the exact date.
Yes, sir. Well.
Wish I could.
Well, I don't know if things looking funnier by the day, though. I mean, they just don't, they really don't have a good feel.
No, they don't.
They really don't have a good feel.
They sure don't.
Okay, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Well, I think I can take one more call before we get out of here. 520-333-4578. And I can't believe I've done everything right except at the beginning of the program. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I can't believe it got through, Bill.
Well, I'm glad you did. What can I do for you?
I read your book, Behold a Pale Horse, and I see from your service record that we were at boot camp together.
Oh, really?
December, Christmas of 1965.
Yeah?
Probably sat at the same table with you at the mess hall, but I, you know, of course didn't know who you were. But
might have been in the same company.
If a guy can believe half of what's in your book, he'd be scared to death, huh?
Well, what I wrote in the front is that if even 10% of what I wrote in that book turns out to be true, we're in deep, 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 deep trouble. And I got to tell you that over 10% has already come true.
Yeah, I've been following this thing for about 10 years, and it's getting pretty spooky. Two quick questions. Do you have any insight into what these planes that put clouds in the sky? And number two, I saw an anti-gravity disc about 1979 in Wyoming very clearly.
Uh-huh.
And just a little curious, who might have been piloting that thing?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. They didn't tell me. And I can tell you this. All my research has shown me that these things, what was probably the beginning of the technology was developed in Germany in World War II, that the Russians got part of it, the English and the Canadians got part of it, and we got part of it. And we have all been developing these things in secret. I think that at some future date they're going to be used to promulgate an artificial alien threat or landing or invasion or they're here. Which means we've got to come together as one world, one government, in order to oppose this threat. And we're out of time. Got to go. Good night.
Thank you, Bill.
Good night, folks. And God bless you all. And I don't know where I'm at here. But I'm just going to punch some buttons and hit it.
Love, love, love.